We're back on Focus Richmond and thrilled to have Paul Galante here with us. And, you know, if you look up the definition of hero, if you don't find Paul Galante, you need to check your reference book because he is absolutely one, U.S. Navy pilot who was shot down during Vietnam. He was held in the famous Hanoi Hilton for how many years? Is it almost
6 years and 8 months.
6 years and 8 months, huh? But you know the days, too.
2,430
days. Yeah. And came back and had a huge impact on a lot of people when he came back. But the person who had the most impact on him, which I want to talk about now, it was his beautiful bride, who I had the great honor of meeting on a couple of different occasions, Phyllis Galante. You met her, and then off you go to war. And you probably, I think, maybe from what I've learned about you, maybe underestimated her strength. Tell us a little bit about her.
Well, I met her in Turkey. Both of our fathers were career Army officers, and were stationed over in Turkey at the same time. But I didn't date her over there because my mother, who worked in the school where she went, said, "Oh, you got to meet this Phyllis Eason. She's just absolutely gorgeous." I said, "Yeah, right, Mom."
So Mom recommended her. She's out, right?
She probably makes her own clothes, too, right? And anyway, so we didn't date there. But I knew who she was, and she was drop-dead gorgeous. Well, her dad had the misfortune of getting reassigned to Fort Meade, Maryland, which happens to be 8 miles from the front gate of the Naval Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, for a variety of reasons, we dated there for off and on for the whole 4 years I was a midshipman. And then she was a couple years younger than I was. But I went off flight training from the Naval Academy, and she graduated from high school and then went on to William & Mary. My dad got reassigned from France to Turkey to France, and then to Fort Belvoir, Virginia. Her dad got reassigned to Fort Monroe, Virginia. And I spent a lot of time pre-interstate on I-95 and Route 60, going back and forth between William & Mary and Fort Monroe. And so we started dating. It got pretty serious. She was my ring dance. The junior year was the big deal. But off I went to flight training. I discovered there very quickly that being single and being and that living in the BOQ was not my cup of tea, and so I proposed to her home at Christmas leave, and she came down. I became sort of like the designated driver for both booze and girls. And my friends down in Pensacola, we ended up getting married at Fort Monroe while I was still in flight training, in advanced training. So anyway, I came back and got married, and she came down and got to see the last about month of flight training. She didn't participate in, but she learned what her life was going to be like.
I want to jump ahead a little bit because we do have some time restraints here. You're being held prisoner of war, and I know you were worried about her and all she was going through. Turns out when you got back home that this sweet girl that you knew was just one heck of a fighter. I mean, I knew her before I knew you. She was on TV. She was doing radio interviews. She was always in the paper. She was always making sure that nobody forgot about y'all.
Well, we didn't have any kids, and she was, you know, what Navy wives are supposed to. She was nice and quiet and standing on the pier. She wasn't pregnant, but the mm-hmm. Navy wives are supposed to stand on the pier barefoot and pregnant, waving mm-hmm. goodbye to Sir Galahad as mm-hmm. he sails around the horizon. She was quiet for a couple of years. She got a job working for Reynolds Metals, and the wives decided after a while, I said, "This stinks. You know, they've been over there longer than World War II, and we've got to do something about it." So they formed this National League of Families. It was a bit major pushback. Of course, there's all kinds of, this is the 60s. You know, there's mm-hmm. all kinds of pushback on everything in the college campuses and whatever. So they didn't do it for that reason. But they became a very big voice. Admiral Stockdale's wife, Sybil, lived in San Diego, and it's awfully hard. She's raising four little boys, and it's very hard for her to come back to Washington where all the action is. So she asked Phyllis to sort of fill in for some of the congressional hearings. And at one point, Phyllis called Ross Perot, who had run an awareness program in Dallas that had gone pretty well. They wanted some advice on how to do that. He said, "Phyllis, here's what I want you to do. You just go on. You go down. You get every business leader in Richmond in one big room, and the university president, everybody, and bank presidents. You get them all in one big room. I want to talk to them."
Uh-huh.
And he flew in, and he started. Well, Phyllis ended up having the most successful letter writing campaign in history. I mean, VC for a while was talking about studying it for marketing. Basically, there were more letters written than there were people in the geographical area. Every school kid was writing letters, and it was always, the theme was bring Paul home. Mm-hmm. And nobody knew who the heck
Paul was.
That was Ray. Nobody knew who the heck Paul was, but everybody was writing letters to bring him home. So I came by. She was shy. I mean, she was a French major from William & Mary. But she was too shy to even think about getting up in front of a class and teach French. That was so she could learn French wines and stuff and pronounce Paris the right way. So she became famous. And I just can't tell you how many folks came up to me after I came home and said, that little lady of yours, boy, she's just did a heck of a job. Mm. Another paraphrase. But I'd learned about it, what she was doing in Hanoi, ironically, because when Ho Chi Minh died in 1968, they stopped the torture and the bad treatment for a while. You had to physically do attack a guard or something to get hammered. Before it was done, just sort of drill. But I got called in for an interrogation December of 1972. It was right during the Christmas bombing. They'd moved about half of us up to the mountains just in case the B-52s missed and got us instead. And that we were the only leverage that North Vietnam had on Uncle Sam. So the camp commander called me in for interrogation. He said, and I was a good guy. He had some tea and some cookies. And said, according to you, what are your wife's activities? And I said, well, how do I know? I don't get any mail. He says, maybe that is why you get no mail. I wasn't sure what she was doing, but whatever it was, he didn't like it. So therefore I did.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, if it's making him mad, that's a good thing. She was an amazing woman. I know that the Virginia War Memorial honored you and her with a special honor. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Dr. Bruce Heilman, a Renaissance man. He'd been president of the University of Richmond, but he was on the board for the War Memorial. And Admiral Heckman, who's the executive director, came over and they said, Paul, we want to take you to lunch. And all I could think of is Bruce Heilman was probably the best fundraiser in the history of the world. And they said, they want to take us to lunch. And Phyllis said, oh, okay, but
bring your checkbook or something that. Yeah.
So we walk in. I had my thumb over my wallet. And we walked in, and he said, we want to name the new education center after you and you two. And I thought, God, well, that's really great. And Phyllis's first reaction was, I'm not wearing a hard hat or a shovel. So anyway, the answer was yes, sort of. And there we were, December 17th, 2010. With Governor Kane was there, and the Speaker of the House and the President Pro Tem of the Senate. Everybody's lined up with hard hats and shovels. And I looked over at Tim, at Governor Kane, and said, I just want you to know, sir, that if my old chemistry prof at Navy knew they were naming a building that had the words Galante and Education in the same title, he'd do aileron rolls in his grave.
It is a beautiful facility, and obviously for generations to come, that name Galante will be associated with education. And I know over at the McGuire Center that they have the Arboretum actually named after your wife.
Yeah, it's really touching because she was really into things green, trees, and she planted gardens and everything. They've all died since she died. And because I'm not into it, my son is moving into the house that we occupied. It's very soon. But it's she was really a remarkable woman. And she spoke fluent French. And one of my favorite stories is she went over to France because that's where the peace talks were going on, you know, quote-unquote peace talks, where we were giving North Vietnam everything they wanted mm-hmm. in exchange for nothing, which sort of set the tone for our current negotiations overseas. But she'd go over there, and these North Vietnamese, they all spoke fluent French. It had been a French colony mm-hmm. say, years before. And they're sitting there talking about, you know, who's this Yankee toad, you know, and what the heck does she want? And they're talking to each other. And she answers in French saying, I'm here to get you guys' attention. And they just, oh, like I know they've been had caught with the hand in the cookie
They jar. Thought they were talking. She couldn't understand.
It was the best thing that happened to us while we were over there. And because of her efforts, I think that's a major reason that our treatment went. There are two reasons. I think one is the stuff that Phyllis and Sybil Stockdale and a few of the wives did to get them bad publicity, which communists hate. Mm-hmm. And they released a couple of prisoners early who were sworn to secrecy. They couldn't tell anything, but one of them, the only seaman they captured, had fallen off his ship and swam, and he swam for 12 hours like they taught him in boot camp, and he was captured. He was ordered to come home because he'd memorized all the names, a bunch of other stuff, so he didn't want to do it. He'd refused, but that one of the officers said, you go home. If you get offered early release, you take it. And he came home and started blowing the whistle, and so the public was outraged, and it really changed. I really think that's what changed our opinion. And so did Ross Perot. He said the change in public attitude back here, some people were for the war, against the war, whatever. Everything was divided 50-50, except for the prisoners of war, and it was 100% on both sides. Everybody wanted to see the prisoners come home.
And a lot of that was due to Phyllis Galante and the other wives.
It was. And just because that was the only good thing they ever had. Everybody is hating each other at that point, apparently. Mm-hmm. One of the good things about my captivity, Bill, was I got to miss the 60s. I spectated from afar. We were probably the last little group that knew about the moonshot. Mm-hmm. And we found out about a year and a half after it had happened. When somebody got a little sugar pack, one of these got a little packet, somebody sent him a little sugar pack from home. They had a picture of Buzz Aldrin standing there with the flag sticking out straight.
Not something the Vietnamese would want you to see.
No, as I said, moon landing June 20th, 1969. Gosh, that was a year and a half ago. Yeah. And I'd be willing to bet we were the only people in the civilized world, the last ones that knew about that. Mm. And after that, as soon as we found out about that, word went around the camp very fast. We started telling the guards and the interrogators that we allow you to look at our moon. Have you seen our moon?
We've got about a minute left. I want you to give everybody listening a little 4th of July thought of yours. Anything you want.
I'm going to, if you don't mind, I closed a documentary out one time about the POWs, and they'd ask what three things I learned.
Okay.
The first was I wasn't as tough as I thought I was. I mean, I was like John Wayne. I was going to go in guns blazing, and that didn't happen. I learned that no matter how bad I had it, somebody else always had it worse. But the most important thing I learned that came from solitary confinement, which is awful, was there's no such thing as a bad day when there's a doorknob on the inside of the door.
Our very special thanks to Paul Galante, a true American hero, an example for all of us, and a great honor to have you on with us, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank
and happy Independence Day weekend to everyone from all of us at Summit Media and Focus Richmond.